Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America.
Jim Hinckley's America. Hey, good morning, everyone. A little bit of music from Joe and Woody and the boys of the Road Crew. Always a great way to start a program about road trips. Hey, we got a, pardon the pun, electrifying program for you this morning with Mike and Jessica from Las Vegas. We're going to be talking about Route 66 Adventures and Route 66 Adventures in a Tesla. Mr. Mike, Jessica, how are you folks doing this morning?
Good morning. We're okay. Can you hear us?
Oh, yeah. Just fine and dandy.
Okay, great.
Wonderful. Good to be here, Jim. Thank you for having us. I appreciate it.
Oh, I enjoy talking with you folks. We haven't had a chance to do this in a while. And, well, you know, a lot of stuff's been coming up lately about electric vehicles, especially here in Kingman, now that the Historic Electric Vehicle Foundation is moving forward with some of their plans. And then yesterday I was reading a pretty interesting article a fellow sent me from the New York Times about Norway. It says about 80% of new cars sold in Norway in the last 24 months are electrics. That's pretty astounding.
That really is astounding, and I cannot wait until that stat hits the U.S.
Yeah, it'll be a few years yet, but I think Norway's not going to be selling gas cars after 2024.
Yeah, 25. Really. Yeah, 2025. Yeah. You know, like a lot of folks, I've got mixed feelings about that. You know, gosh darn it. It's especially the older we get, the harder it is for us to adapt to change. And folks that fans of ours know that I'm pretty partial. I have trouble with most technology past Model A Ford era, but Teslas and these cars just fascinate the daylights out of me. And when you bring your Tesla down here to Chillin on Beale, I know it attracts quite a crowd.
Some good and some bad.
Oh, yeah.
You get some catcalling.
You know, it's kind of sad, but yeah. It's understandable. You know, I was wrote a blog for a client about 3 days ago, looking back at the beginning of the auto industry. And, you know, every time there's a change, an evolutionary step in automotive technology, people get upset. They have trouble adapting, and it bothers them. I kind of understand that. But, you know, if we get so focused on the past, we forget the future. We become so narrow-minded we can look down a beer bottle with both eyes. It's just no good. How long have you folks been? I know you had the Chevy Spark. How long have you been driving electric vehicles?
Well, we got the Chevy Spark EV at the end of 2017, and then the Tesla was fall 2018 when we finally got to the top of their list to be able to order one.
Yeah, that in itself is kind of funny that you have to wait to order a car.
Yeah, they're past that point now. You can get them pretty quick, but it was 2.5 months, I think, that we waited when we ordered the Tesla.
How was, were you able to, was there any, I know the Spark was a good urban car.
Right. Yeah,
was there a big transition for you when you started, driving, long distance in an electric car?
The main transition was going from using Gas Buddy to find the cheapest place to find gas to using PlugShare to find places where we could actually plug in the car.
Yeah. I mean, I was always kind of the person that planned trips anyway.
Yes.
So, you know, if you're winging it, then electric car is going to be tougher and you're going to have some adjustment. But if you're like us, we're going to like, okay, this is where we're going to stop for gas. This is where we're going to do this and going to go this many miles just because we have not that much time to do a trip in, you know, goes more efficiently if you plan it out. I was that kind of person anyway, so it wasn't much of a change.
You know, that people talk about range anxiety and all these different things, but you know, this was a problem in the first part of the 20th century for people with gasoline cars. I mean, we didn't have service stations. Countless stories of people walking 10, 15, 20 miles to find gasoline.
The good news is now if you do manage to not quite plan appropriately and you run out of power, instead of having to walk 10 or 20 miles, you can at least use your mobile device to call AAA and get what we call the tow of shame, where you get towed to a charging station.
Yeah, we've never had to do that ourselves, but we've come pretty close. You just keep an eye on the range and make sure it doesn't
fall below how many more miles we have to go.
Yeah.
It's the infrastructure, of course, is still a little bit lacking, but that's changing fast. And that's another thing people don't seem to, they have trouble grasping, that this is an opportunity to, we have all these people talking about energy independence in this country. And, you know, the key to that is tapping into things to create an infrastructure for electric vehicles.
Yeah, that's
very true. Whenever we do take a road trip, when we are able to stop and chat with folks, we like to encourage the folks to look into just putting in something that would be similar to an RV RV outlet. And
yeah, the smaller places on Route 66, you know, it could do them good to put in, you know, if they've got the capacity to just put in a plug, and then they can be on plug share and get noticed a little more and encourage the EV folks to stop and, you know, go into the gift shop, get something to eat in the convenience store, you know, just a snack, or, you know, spend a little bit of their money on getting Route 66 souvenirs or supporting the local places instead of putting it into a gas tank.
You've been taking, you've driven that Tesla quite a lot. I've run into you folks back at the Miles of Possibility Conference in Illinois, and now you're headed for the AAA Route 66 Road Fest in Tulsa. You've driven Route 66, God, how many times now with your car?
You know, mostly we're still kind of in California and Arizona just due to vacation time from work not being that great. But we've covered the whole Route 66 corridor aside from about the last 100 miles to Chicago. We didn't quite have the time to keep going east from the Miles of Possibility Conference, but we still have many, many places that we need to stop at, because you know how it is on Route 66. You can't do the whole thing no matter how much time you have. There's always stuff that you miss, so we keep going back over and over again.
I'd say we've driven probably at least a good two or three times. We've gone as far back as Oklahoma and then up to the Miles Possibility in Illinois.
Well, Route 66 is all about the people. And once you start stop and talk to folks, before you know it, you've driven 150 miles and you've been on the road 12 hours.
Yes.
That's definitely our problem. One of our trips, you know, about 10 years ago, it kind of, we'd go and do everything that we could until it got dark, and then we still had 3 hours to go to get to our motel.
You know, I know a lot about the early history of electric vehicles, but I have to admit, I'm pretty ignorant on modern electric vehicles. I hear a lot about level one, level two charging. What's the difference?
Well, level one is just a regular plug at your house, you know, a 120 volt. Goes pretty slow, as you might imagine, but for back and forth to work, you know, when you're not taking a trip, it works great. Our niece has a Chevy Bolt and has had it for, what, close to 2 years now.
2 years, yeah.
And has only charged it from the wall outlet to go back and forth to work every day. Level two is more like an electric dryer or a welder. If you got a shop in your garage, it's 240. So 240 volts at any amperage that you get is considered a level two. That charges up your car about 25 to 40 miles an hour, which is enough to charge a Tesla from nothing overnight. You know, get ready for a road trip and, you know, you're full in the morning. And then level three is what they call fast charging. And that's the stuff that you do on road trips that charges about, well, anywhere from 100 miles an hour up to 500 or 600 or 700 miles an hour. It kind of goes fast when the charge is low and then slows down as you get towards the top, like pouring a cup of coffee.
I just a little bit, I've been around Teslas, mostly yours and Tudor Melville's down in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, you know, they make even new cars on the showroom seem as antiquated as a Model T Ford. They're just absolutely just fascinating, the technology that goes into these cars. And I understand, you know, people are apprehensive on the road tripping. But I noticed that some of the rental car companies now are pushing for Tesla.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen Tesla. What was it? Hertz bought a whole bunch.
Yeah, Hertz. I forget what the stat was, but something like 20% of their fleet is now electric. And then I know the rental cars turn over quick.
And they've also been looking into Polestar, which is another electric vehicle.
Yeah, that's Volvo's electric brand. So there's a lot of Polestar 2 rental cars out there.
You know, the biggest problem with, I would see with rental agencies having electrics is, well, it's the problem in general with electric cars, is education.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
There's people, you don't drive, you don't drive an electric vehicle the way you do a gas vehicle.
And that's very true.
You don't drive a gasoline car the way you do a diesel.
Right.
There's some adjustments, and you kind of have to be familiar with those. On our way to Kingman a month and a half ago, we were stopped at a charger. And this guy, just when we were about to leave, this guy pulled up in a rental Polestar 2. And I think the Hertz guys done him dirty because they didn't do anything to inform him about the adjustments that he would need to make. And he was kind of lost. We spent an hour with him helping him figure things out, where to charge and how to get it done. And you know, they were down from the Vegas area in a rental.
See, that's... you're doing a disservice to everyone if don't...
Absolutely.
Because this leaves a bad taste in his mouth and for understandable reasons.
Yeah, the Polestar 2 is a great car, and it was a really neat car to, you know, we got to look in it when he was there. But you got to at least get a little bit of information if you're just going to hit the road in one of these, because it is different. It's not worse in virtually any sense, but it is different. So you need to learn a little bit. You know, and if you're an owner, that's the kind of stuff that you learn in the first month.
You know, you've, well, that's interesting. you know, the infrastructure, I'm sure you've seen the infrastructure change dramatically in the last, couple of years, really.
Oh, yeah. It's, Tesla always had the biggest network of chargers, and they've got many more. I mean, the trip we took in, 2021 was fine, and the back, along Route 66 as far as Oklahoma, and the trip we took in 2022 was even better because more chargers mean more choices.
Yeah,
where you stop, because when you stop and charge, you might be there for 20 minutes or maybe 30, so you kind of pick and choose where you're going to have your lunch.
Right.
That kind of, you know, stuff you're already going to do. You kind of narrow your choices a little bit to near where the chargers are, but more of them just means there's more choices.
I got a question here for you from North Carolina. Do you ever have you any apprehension of crossing the Mojave Desert in the summer in an electric vehicle?
Well, let me tell you something. In a short range electric vehicle like our Chevy Spark, which is rated for 80 miles, but he's a little bit lower than that now just because he's a little older and he's, you know, as we get older, we do that. I would have apprehension crossing the Mojave Desert in the Spark just because there aren't as many places to charge for him.
Yeah, but he's a low range city car, so it's not something that we ever do.
But the Tesla. In our Tesla, I would have no apprehension at all. It's just a matter of planning your charging stop before you hit that desert area, making sure, of course, you have water because water is always good. And then,
the car navigation tells you how far you can go before you need to charge. So typically, we know where we're going already. We hit the navigation to that point, and you can just see how many miles the car's got and how many miles you got to go. When you're using air conditioning in an electric car, it doesn't use an appreciable amount of energy. You know, it's just the AC compressor is just another little motor, so it doesn't significantly add. Heat uses a lot more relative to how much the car is using than air conditioning does.
Well, that makes the Norway experience even more intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Because, I mean, it's very cold up there. I'm sure they're using the heaters quite a lot. But they're also a smaller country than us. They don't have, I think, such vast distances that we do in the West. So that part, I'm sure, is a little easier for them.
All right, this is really exciting. And, of course, you have electric Route 66. And I joke with you folks a lot about this, but it's really fitting. You two are quite the EV evangelist. I know, like you said, you get a few cat calls and a few other things, but you patiently wade through that. But you're so generous showing off your car that I think you're reaching some people. And the key to getting this accepted, just as in 1890s, getting people to accept automobiles, is awareness, education. Mm-hmm. And I think that's crucial.
And when we're out, you know, doing the roads, we've been roadies for 15 years doing Route 66. So we're somebody that people already know. And we go to these events and we're happy to show them the car. It's something that a lot of them haven't seen before or haven't had the opportunity to look inside and ask questions of people. And we're happy to answer anything that anybody wants to ask. And we've had probably 50 people drive that car too. You're not one of them yet.
Well, I know that. I'm always reluctant to drive someone else's car. It's
understandable.
I consider somebody else's car almost like their wife. And so I'm really reluctant to do that. But man, I tell you, they're just such intriguing automobiles. But you know, the electric vehicle has a long history. And of course, part of the myth of electric vehicles is that oil companies conspired to kill them. And the reality of it's quite different than that. You know, it's the technology wasn't there. The science behind electric vehicles hasn't changed a great deal.
Oh, yeah. It's always been the battery tech that has held them back, you know. And in the early days when they were in cities and they were part of taxi cab fleets over 100 years ago, it was because they couldn't go that far. But in the city, you didn't need to go that far.
Well, the electric,
so it worked. But once people got to drive further and further, then the gas just left it behind because the battery tech wasn't there to drive far.
Electric vehicles have always, and I'm surprised they didn't do more of this. Instead of waning in the late 30s, I'm surprised they didn't become more popular. Urban use electric vehicles have always made sense to me. Mm-hmm. It's only recently with new technologies that long distance traveling in electric vehicles has become somewhat practical. You know, there's another component too that people overlook sometimes about the demise of the first generation electric vehicles is it came like a light bulb came on in my head. Gallup, New Mexico did not have electricity. I think it was 1928 before Gallup had electricity. So a lot of these rural communities down south, Alabama, Tennessee, the West, they didn't have electricity until the teens, the 20s, even the 30s.
Right.
So if you don't have electricity in your house or your neighborhood, obviously an electric vehicle really doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, right. I mean, people were coming into the small towns from farms in the area that also didn't have electricity, and you needed something to get you those distances. So yeah, without electricity, it doesn't work. So that's why they were relegated to the cities, and then gas took over. Even though the gas cars weren't that reliable, they could still, a full tank of gas can get you all those places in the West that didn't have electricity.
Yeah, the old cars were not known for reliable. One of the cars, the Everett Metzger Flanders automobiles, they had the nickname EMF, Every Morning Fix 'Em. this is really exciting what you guys are doing. And now, Anders, you're tied in with the Historic Electric Vehicle Foundation?
I got asked to join the board of directors for the EV Foundation. And so as of last weekend, I'm officially part of the board of directors. Hopefully I can, help where I'm asked and get more recognition for them. We're going to be hopefully doing some live videos, social media posts on our way to the AAA Road Fest in Tulsa at the end of June, and get a little plug in for them there too. Help them get their EV experience museum going in Kingman, and just add another attraction for folks coming to Kingman to see and do while they're there. Maybe spend more time there on 66.
Well, the EV museum, it's been embryonic. It's been kind of stagnant. It opened in 2014 during the International Route 66 Festival in Kingman. So I'm really excited to see that moving forward. Educational facility, conference center, museum. Past, present, and the future of the electric vehicles. That's going to be an exciting endeavor, and I look forward to your videos and more from the Historic Electric Vehicle Foundation. And you maintain a blog, too, with the Electric Route 66?
ElectricRoute66.com, yeah. Which I just kind of started to inform people, because among our roadie friends, we're kind of the only people that are driving an electric car on these road trips that we see regularly. So I just kind of put up some information, help people who aren't familiar with EVs to get a little more familiar, and help people who are on the route, like businesses, to get some information, maybe encourage them to put in a slow charger to get EV folks to stop. So it kind of goes both ways. Encourage EV drivers to get out there on the road and support places, and encourage the places to give the EV drivers a reason to come and confidence that they can do it, because it's still kind of early days. It's a little inconvenient to take the road trips, but we aim to show that it can be done, and it's not a giant hassle. It's a little bit of adjustment here and there,
but thoroughly enjoyable, very much enjoyable. And the people that we meet as we're going on our road trips are just amazing. The conversations we have, it's so wonderful just to connect with people.
Route 66 is an ideal venue for this because of the people. The people on Route 66 in general are inquisitive, they're friendly, they're fascinated by things, and you have an international audience on Route 66 to talk with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of neat. I've always done things in my world a little bit backwards than most people. People are slowly embracing electric vehicles moving forward. And I was just out yesterday working on this 51 Chevy, and I started thinking to myself, you know, this truck's a little too modern. I'd really like to get me a 29 Ford for my trips. But that's just me. I do things a little different.
If it weren't you, Jim, that's just part of you. And that's part of what we love about you.
Oh, I need another old car like a frog needs tap dancing shoes. Guys, I want to thank you for this, joining me this morning. Most of all, I really want to thank you for your patience and tenacity and willingness to share your experiences.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
And now that they are able to rent electric vehicles, I would encourage people. In fact, it's something I've got on my bucket list to do sometime this summer, is to rent an electric vehicle for just a few days. Just get a feel for it. Get a glimpse of the future, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And the not too distant future.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, every stat that I've seen says that 90% of people that buy an electric car don't want to go back.
Yeah.
These aren't people that haven't driven gas cars before. We've driven gas cars our entire lives, and that's going to be true of virtually 100% of the electric car owners that you are going to meet for years to come. And 90% of them don't want to go back to gas. And there's a reason for that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things to do I would like to encourage people that when you do try an EV experiment, if you will, try to go into it with an open mind. Put aside all the pros and cons, the politics, if you will, of this, that it's a communist conspiracy or it's saving the planet. Put aside all of that and go into it with just an open mind and curiosity. And I'd sure like to hear what people think when they experience electric vehicles for the first time, because I'm a real fan of automotive history and evolution. And so I'm really intrigued to hear what people's experiences are. It would really fascinate me.
Yeah, we didn't get into buying electric cars and going electric to save the planet. I mean, if you were a really hardcore environmentalist, you wouldn't be driving a car at all.
Right.
So we got it to save our wallets.
Definitely.
You know, best time to switch is when you already need to buy a car. And, you know, not all of us are superhuman like you and keep very, very senior cars going for long, long amounts of time. Most of us are having to replace our cars, you know, 8, 10, 15 years.
Well,
and that's the time when the switchover happens. There's going to be gas cars on the road for a long time to come, and electric will eventually eclipse those.
Yes, yes. Well, I appreciate your compliments, but I keep these things on the road because I believe in getting my money's worth. And, you know, like this old Jeep, I know I paid $3,000 hard-earned dollars for that about 20 years ago. And now I just recently had to spend another $400 on it. So that means I got to drive it another 2 years.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. You know, one of the reasons that we went electric was, you know, as Mike said, our wallet. But let me tell you, it's amazing when you realize that pretty much the only maintenance that you're going to do is changing the blinker fluid.
That's, you know, that's another aspect of these is people need to think about is the extreme low maintenance on these.
Yeah. There's no transmission. There's no oil to be changed. Yeah, belts, there's no belts.
Belts, hoses, all that stuff just kind of goes by the wayside. I lift up the hood and like there's some coolant to put in and you know, rotate the tires. You know, the biggest expense is tires.
Well, here's a question I have here from Michigan. What is the battery life and what is the cost of battery replacement?
Well, battery replacement is kind of similar to replacing an engine and a transmission on a modern gas car.
Yeah.
By law, the minimum warranty on a battery, the main battery, is 8 years and 100,000 miles. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where it costs a lot, yes, but it's going to be 8 years at least until that's even a possibility. Otherwise, it's going to be under warranty. And in 8 years, the prices for batteries are not even going to be similar to what they are now. So, you know, you can make a guess as to how much it costs to replace the battery, but it's not going to be accurate to if it actually happens at some point in the future.
Yeah.
My Ford van had a transmission go out. You know, this is just a gas panel van for my work. And it was going to be $6,000 for a new transmission.
God, that's almost double the cost of anything I've ever bought.
I'm glad I wasn't having to pay for that.
The other thing that people need to think about, too, is, yes, we've got the lithium batteries, but battery technology is changing dramatically. It's astounding some of the things they're working on coming up with. Instead of hybrids that are electric gas, hybrids that are electric hydrogen, the technology is just amazing what is happening out there. Obviously, you folks are probably you're in the category that's not going back to gasoline.
Definitely.
The charging infrastructure is still issues, but I'm seeing some things there too. This is a little bit old news. A few years ago, Mr. Musk was talking about shingles for your house that also were solar charging.
Yeah, Tesla solar roof.
Yeah. Is that still an ongoing endeavor? I haven't heard much about that.
I think it is, but I have already got solar on my house. We've had it for a number of years, and so I haven't dug deep into that. The solar roof thing is, I think, still expensive. They're still very low volume on that, but I don't know the details on it. Clearly it's something that's going to be happening in the future, but I think progress is a little slow on that. And, traditional solar panels are more economical. I think the roof part is, still very much for the high end at this point.
Guys, Mike, Jessica, thank you for doing this morning. I really looked forward to this conversation because I'm really intrigued by electric vehicles. I'm ignorant. But ignorance can be cured with knowledge. So I'm always eager to learn new things.
We are so happy to be here, Jim. Really, yeah. Truly, and we always love happy sharing to answer this
stuff. All up and down the route. We share what we can.
I will get this published in about an hour or so, and I'll get it up on social media, and I'll send it out to my automotive friends, and well, not just here, but magazines I work for in New Zealand and other places, and I'd be kind of curious to see what kind of comments we get on this. That's always interesting.
Oh, yeah. I'd be curious to see what kind of comments, too.
I'll make sure that I keep you posted on that.
Well, thank you.
Guys, thank you for doing this morning. I know it's your Sunday, getting up early, but I appreciate this.
It was truly our pleasure.
Are you going to be down for Chilling on Beale this month, or?
I'm not sure. We got to check our calendar. We come down, you know, when we can.
Yeah.
But I don't even know. I've got to look at the calendar to find out whether we can make it or not.
We'll definitely try.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
If we've got the availability, we love to come down and do that.
For folks who aren't aware, Chilling on Beale here in Kingman, Arizona is held on Beale Street, one block off Route 66. And it's the third Saturday afternoon of every month, April through October. And it's just a fun, simple, free event. And as you can see, talking here with Mike and Jessica, we get everything from Teslas to Hondas and lowriders and 1910 Cadillacs and God, you never know what's going to show up. So it's always fun.
I saw Gene Kirkham bought that electric horseless carriage replica from somebody that the EV Foundation used to have and got raffled off. Gene Kirkamone's at now, so maybe that'll be showing up sometimes too.
You know, yeah, I would like to see more of the early electrics, and I really see I think you're going to see more people coming to electrics. I've noticed in some of the classic car magazines, there's more discussion about the early electrics. Talking to Jay Leno recently, he's really into the old electrics. He and his wife Mavis like to go out looking at Christmas lights in his Detroit Electric. I think it's a 1916.
Yeah, I've seen a couple videos of him driving those around.
He's got a little project. He had a basket case Detroit Electric somewhere in the teens, and he's kind of making a resto mod out of it, keeping it original in appearance, but putting in a modern electric drivetrain in it.
That would be terrifying.
That's another. But you know, the kind of the things we're seeing, and we saw this at the Fun Run too, conversion of old vehicles to electric. The folks had that El Camino during the 66 Fun Run that was electric.
72 El Camino was nice.
And there's, I understand that Neil Young was working on a 58 or 9 Lincoln convertible that he was going to have as an electric car.
Yeah, I know there's a 49 Mercury out there that somebody spent something like $250,000 doing an extremely custom EV conversion on.
Jay Leno had that on his on one of his video programs recently. What an interesting automobile.
Very much so.
$250,000.
It was something like that. Don't quote me on the exact amount, but it was well into six figures.
Well, God bless it. More money than sense, I guess.
At the EV get together at the Fun Run this year, this past weekend, it was very interesting to see the Henny Kilowatt. It was there.
Very rare cars. Those are, if we're not familiar with those, the Henny Kilowatt was basically a Renault Dauphine. And General Electric got a hold of a few of those, about 59, 60, and 61, and to show off electric vehicle technology. They were pretty primitive on that end, but they're an interesting evolutionary step in electric vehicles.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
That's one other reason I'm really excited about the HEVF Electric Vehicle Museum, because the early history of the electrics. You know, people don't realize in the 1890s, we had electric taxi cabs and buses on the streets of New York. And of course, everyone knows electric vehicles are highly dangerous. Just ask Mr. Harry Bliss, the first person ever struck and killed by an automobile in the United States, struck and killed by an electric taxi cab. And we have to ask, how slow was Mr. Bliss? But I digress. Yeah. Guys, thank you, and we will do this again next week, but I sure want to thank you for joining us this morning, and hope you have a great day, and hopefully we've inspired road trips in general. That's the idea.
Oh yeah, whatever you're driving, get out there and see people do things.
Yes, live life.
Yes, live and have fun.
Take care, my friends.
You as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Say hello to a new friend on an old road. Take a two-lane trip of memories into mysteries unknown. Come along for the ride. Jim Hinckley's America. Jim Hinckley's America.
Folks, we will see you next Sunday morning, 7 o'clock, same time. And meanwhile, like I said, get out there, enjoy life, have some fun, talk to people. And my pa always said, if a person isn't careful, they learn something new every day. And I don't know about you, but I've learned a few things today. Adios, mi amigos.